I am the Ascended Master, Mother Mary, and I wish to give you some teachings on the phenomenon of corruption. There are organizations that are inspired by the Ascended Masters to be watchdogs over corruption worldwide. Some have created these corruption indexes where they use various criteria to rank the nations of the world based on how much corruption they have. One can naturally always discuss the criteria used, and one can also see that by using different criteria, one could come to a different ranking. Nevertheless, when you look at some of these indexes, you will see that South Korea is the nation in Asia or in Southeast Asia that has the lowest level of corruption, whereas North Korea is the nation that has the highest level of corruption. It is clear, of course, or at least it should be clear, that in the Golden Age, the phenomenon of corruption cannot exist. It is not even that it cannot be tolerated. It is simply that it cannot exist when you move further into the Golden Age. Therefore, it is necessary for you who are the spiritual people to be aware of this phenomenon and to make calls on it for your particular society, but of course also for other societies that you are seeking to transform. And therefore, you who are the spiritual people in South Korea cannot be lulled asleep by the relatively low level of corruption in the South, for you know, of course, that you need to make the calls for the transformation of the North, and that means the exposure and the overcoming of corruption there. Now, we might begin our look at this phenomenon by asking some simple questions. It has always been the claim of communism or Marxism that it is the creation of a society that is based on serving the interests of the common people, of the workers. How can it be then that North Korea, Venezuela, Cuba, the few countries left that are still clinging to a communist ideology, have the highest levels of corruption among the countries of the world? How can it be that Russia still has a very high level of corruption when it is so influenced by the Soviet past? Is it not a contradiction in terms that the countries that claim to have a political system that looks after the interests of the common people have such high levels of corruption? For it is, or it should be known as a fact, that corruption very much works against the interest of the common people. For the common people do not have a position in society that makes it possible for them to accept bribes. And they are, of course, not among the leadership who form an elite, even in communist nations, and who are therefore able to create corruption at a high level where it is not a matter of accepting bribes, but there is an entirely different level of corruption that is much more subtle. And so you see again that the explanation is quite simple. As we have already mentioned, a communist system simply gives free rein to the formation of a power elite that is led by the fallen beings. We have also said that a unrestrained capitalist country gives free rein to a small elite, and they will also, of course, be the fallen beings who seek to take over that society. What is the essence of corruption? It is self-interest, narrow, fear-based self-interest. The people who are in a position given to them by society are not fulfilling their position in society which is to look after the interests of the people or the interests of the state. Instead, they are looking for their own narrow self-interest and then using their position to accept various forms of corruption, from monetary bribes to the exchange of favors. And who are the people who are willing to pay such bribes or extend such favors? They are also people who are looking out for their interest. For by paying the bribe, you can do something that you cannot do otherwise, and therefore you can get ahead of those who are not able or willing to pay the bribe. So again, you see self-interest. What you see at the higher levels is that you have a small clique, a small elite of people who are exchanging favors in a much more subtle way, where they are helping each other reach or maintain a certain position in society or gain certain personal advantages. So you see, of course, that the phenomenon of corruption is in its essence created by the fallen beings. I am not thereby saying that all who are engaged in corruption, whether receiving it or paying it, are fallen beings. But I am saying that all who are engaged in any form of corruption have been deceived and pulled into the fallen consciousness, and therefore they are part of the system. They have become seduced into thinking that in order to further their self-interest, they have to engage in this corruption. There is no other way for them to do what they think they have to do. You might then ask yourself how there are nations in the world that have reached a very low level of corruption. Is it not then because the people in those nations have been willing to look beyond narrow self-interest and look at what is best for the all? They have created an attitude, a culture, where people are not willing to engage in corruption and where the government takes very strong measures to root out corruption, where the press seeks to expose it, and where the people themselves seek to expose it whenever they encounter it. And so you see from these nations that, of course, they do not have any kind of magic that has allowed them to root out corruption, and something that cannot be copied in other nations. They have simply taken measures because there has been a growing awareness that by looking beyond narrow fear-based self-interest, you can reach a broader, more enlightened self-interest, where it is actually in the interest of the general population to create a society with as little corruption as possible. And this then means that you create a society where the power elite is not as strong. And therefore, even though there still may be a certain power elite in the countries with low corruption, those power elites will not, to the same degree, attract fallen beings, or they will not attract fallen beings who are quite as ruthless. And therefore, you see that these countries simply do not offer the fallen beings what they want. And that is why when you look at a particular country and look at how you could root out corruption, you need to look at what institutions or structures in society are allowing the fallen beings to do what the fallen beings always do, namely attempt to set themselves up as an elite who can exercise power without responsibility, without personal accountability. They want to gain a personal advantage by any means possible, without being held accountable for the means that they use and the suffering it causes the general population. When you look with this perspective on South Korea, you will see that one of the major sources of corruption is, of course, the creation of these business conglomerates that were created after the war. And you may look at this historically and see that while it was one possible measure of how to get the economy going and overcome the devastating effects of the war, it has also had a high cost for the Korean society and the Korean people. What the government did was essentially to give a position to certain families where they could look out for their narrow self-interest without being held accountable by the government, the media, or the people, and without being financially accountable because they were given these loans that the government would guarantee in case they failed. And so what was created here was in many ways the dream of the capitalists and a dream of the fallen beings, where a small group of people in these privileged families could exercise very great control over Korean society without ever being held accountable by that society for how they affected the people. And you may, of course, look at history and see that what was done with these business conglomerates was to create great economic growth in South Korea. And you may say that there was a period where this was beneficial to society. And I will not dispute this viewpoint, although I will point out that economic growth could have been attained in other ways, as it has been demonstrated in other countries of the world. But nevertheless, this was the way that was chosen by the leaders back then, and it must be, of course, acknowledged that they faced a very difficult situation. So they made the choices they made based on the culture and the history, and this is just the way it was. There is no point in lamenting it, placing blame, or saying that this was wrong because of such and such. But there is a need to look at this structure and look at the consequences it has had for society, and there is a need to acknowledge very clearly that these business conglomerates simply cannot take South Korea into the golden age. And therefore, there is a need for drastic reform of the economy in South Korea. There is a need for the government to step in and create a different business structure that will spread the power so that it is not based on certain families, but is much broader, and you create a new type of modern businesses that have a more professional leadership, but also, first of all, a more transparent form of leadership, where people will be held personally accountable for their decisions and their actions and the consequences it has for society, for the employees, and for the people in general. Of course, the government has already attempted to reform the structure, but they have had limited success because, as happens in any society, once you create an elite that has a privileged position, they will become like an octopus that has many tentacles that it spreads into all areas of society. And it will seek to exercise influence through these tentacles, through these connections. And the overall purpose of this influence is to maintain the privileged position of the octopus itself so that it cannot lose its privileges. And therefore, you need to make the calls to support those people in the government, in the media, and in other institutions of society who can bring forth this reform, who have the strength of character and will to carry it through regardless of the opposition. You also need to make the calls that the people are enlightened to this organization of these business conglomerates and to their effect for society. And then you need to make the calls that the people will stand up and support the efforts to reform the structure. You also, of course, need to make the calls for North Korea to have the reform of what they have created, which is also a phenomenon that gives a certain privileges to a very small group of people. Those who can be trusted as part of the party, both whether they are families or whether they are not families, but those who have shown absolute loyalty to the system and who seek to keep themselves in their positions of power. I would like to take you to a greater understanding so that you can look beyond the concrete situation in South and North Korea or even other Asian countries. I would indeed like to take you back in history and realize that the situation you have right now in South and North Korea is not actually unique in history. The outer characteristics may be unique in the form that you have a communist system in South Korea and you in North Korea and you have the business conglomerates in South Korea. But if you look behind the concrete specific situation, you see a pattern that can be seen in many previous ages, not only in Korea, but in many of the nations of East and Southeast Asia. And you will see that many of these past societies that Jesus talked about that had a very high level of organization also had a high level of corruption because they also were very hierarchical societies that gave special privileges to a very small elite at the top of society. Now there is, my beloved, as Jesus said, a certain awareness in the souls of all people that life is supposed to be a certain way and that there are certain manifestations that are not supposed to happen. And of course, one of these subconscious awarenesses or aspects of awareness that are found in all people is that the essence of life is free will. The essence of growth is that you exercise choices. But in order to exercise choices, you have to have options. And so, if you live in a society where you are born into a certain station in life, and if your parents were peasants, you have no option other than to become a peasant, then the soul will know that it has not been given by its society the proper options for exercising its free will. There simply isn't the freedom, the availability of options for the soul to choose a path in life that will lead it to maximum growth in that lifetime. Instead, the soul also only has the option to mechanically fulfill the station defined by society. And this does not lead to maximum growth. And so the soul knows that this is not right. Now what you see is a very strange phenomenon in such societies, where those who are at the lower levels of society come to the acceptance that there is nothing they can do within the structure of that society. They need to accept their station, and although they are dissatisfied with their station, they cannot see how to revolt. But then you see a certain middle class of people who feel that they have an opportunity to exercise certain options. They have certain options available to them for improving their lot in life. But they cannot do this by working within the official system. Even though they have a certain station in life, even if they carry out that station to the best of their ability, they have no possibility of advancing to another station. They can only live the life that their station defines by following the official rules. But they see that through corruption, they can change their lot in life within certain boundaries. They might get more money than they get paid by the state in that society, so they can live a more comfortable lifestyle for themselves and their family. They might be able to give certain favors to certain people who can give favors to them or their family. And so there is a strange phenomenon where people's natural drive to improve their lives can only be expressed in these hierarchical societies through corruption. And this is something that then deceives the middle class of the people into thinking that this is not so bad after all, and therefore they also have no drive to reform the system. And then when you go to the highest levels of society, the elite, that is sanctioned by the system itself, whatever the system may be, you see that some of those are actually also deceived into using corruption to improve their lives. But others of them are, of course, fallen beings. And what you need to recognize here is that any time you have a highly structured society, a hierarchical society that has a small elite at the top of the pyramid, then you will have fallen beings who occupy all of the top positions. We might say that those in the top 10% of the ruling elite in society will be fallen beings. This, of course, must not be confused with when we talk about the top 10% as the spiritual people who have the highest level of spiritual development. What I am talking about here are those who are on top of the pyramid in terms of exercising power in a particular society. And so you have seen many societies in history where virtually all of the people in this 10% of the ruling elite were fallen beings. What I desire you to understand here is that there is a peculiar phenomenon that takes place in such a ruling elite. The fallen beings are beings who are trapped in narrow, fear-based self-interest. There are some fallen beings that you can say they do not have a personal self-interest in the sense that they are actually fighting for a cause or working for a cause. But it is, of course, not the cause of God, not the cause of raising up all life. It is a cause such as, for example, proving God wrong by causing destruction and by causing people to destroy their creativity and not exercise their Christhood. They are also fallen beings who have a certain desire to attain power, great power over others. And then there are some fallen beings who have a desire for great wealth, great privileges, and a very comfortable, sensual, pleasure-based lifestyle. And so you can talk about roughly three classifications of fallen beings: those who are working for a destructive cause, those who want power, and those who want pleasure. And when you have a country where all three of these categories of fallen beings exist in the ruling elite, then you will see a strange phenomenon where they work out a silent, unspoken agreement between them, where there is an acceptance of our hierarchical structure. If there is a fallen being who is working for a destructive cause, then that being will always attain the top position. There is usually only one such being in embodiment in a given society, for they find it very difficult to coexist in the same society. There are few of these fallen beings in embodiment at any given time, for many of them exist in the identity realm or even in some of the lower realms of the astral realm. There are few also in the mental realm. So when one of these beings is in embodiment in a certain society, it will always attain the top position because it has this unfailing belief in its right to rule, and it is extremely aggressive and ruthless in destroying anyone who stands in its way and in the way of its cause. It is very rare that those who are below this fallen being in society actually believe in the cause, but they accept it because they see that they can use it to get what they want. And that means that you have certain fallen beings who want to exercise power, and they realize they can get this power by playing along with the top fallen being who is working for a cause. Thereby, that fallen being, always a man, will give them power over others, the power they desire. And then there are the fallen beings who want pleasure or money, and they see that they can fall in line with the two classes above them, whereby they will get privileged positions that allows them to get all the money they need to buy the pleasure they want. And so you see the formation of this silent, unspoken rank between the fallen beings. And this is something you can see in several modern societies. One of the prominent examples is Germany in the 1930s, where Hitler, of course, was the top fallen being who was working for his destructive cause. Then below him were a group of people who had high positions in the Nazi Party or in the armed forces, and they were the ones who wanted power. Few of them truly believed in Hitler's cause, but they saw that if they supported him as he needed to be supported, he would give them power over their area. And so even though you had several fallen beings who normally would have been in a rivalry to get absolute power, they were able to align themselves under Hitler and therefore stop their internal rivalry, put it aside while he was there keeping them at bay. And beneath those fallen beings, there was a class who took up positions in industry and business and banking, and they were the ones who wanted money to buy pleasure and privileges for themselves and their families. You will, of course, see a similar pattern in other societies. But the most common pattern you find in most societies is, of course, one where there is not a fallen being who belongs to the class that is working for a destructive cause, like Hitler. You find only one or several of the type of fallen beings who want power for the sake of having power. In some cases, you will see that several of these beings can also create a rank between them, so there is one at the top and others who put themselves underneath that one. But you will also see in many cases that the fallen beings who want power form different groupings. For example, people who lead different corporations, different companies, who are in a certain state of competition. And then, of course, you will in all cases see a group of fallen beings who are simply in it for the money and the privileges and pleasure it can buy them. And they are willing to do whatever those above them in rank tell them as long as they can get money. What you will also see is that in some cases, the fallen beings who want power can find a way to accept a certain rank or a certain position amongst themselves, even when they are competing for power. You will see in South Korea how some of the very powerful families behind the business conglomerates have been fallen beings and still are fallen beings in embodiment. But they have found a way so that even they are competing by making the same products, they are not directly seeking to destroy each other. They are accepting that they must all have a certain piece of the cake because they realize that instead of seeking to destroy each other so that one conglomerate takes over and eliminates or takes over the others and therefore gains the top position, it is more important for all of them to maintain the current structure that allows them to take advantage of society and of the people and extract power and wealth beyond what they could achieve if they went into war with each other so that one of them would be destroyed and another would be emerge as the only one. So I tell you this so that you can make the calls for the judgment of Christ upon the fallen beings who are embodied in South Korean society and who are leading these business conglomerates. You can, of course, make calls also for the judgment of Christ upon the fallen beings in North Korea, who are the leaders of that country. Here, of course, you have the structure of certain people who want power. But you do not actually have a fallen being at the top of North Korean society who belong to the class that I mentioned that are working for a destructive cause. You actually have a being who belongs to the class who wants power, for he simply does not have the vision to even work for a particular cause, as there is no real cause that has meaning to him, not even communism or Marxism. And so you can make calls for the judgment of not only the people who are in the top of North Korean society, but of the demons behind them, and of course for the binding of the demons in South Korea as well. And so when you have this awareness, and when you use it to make the precise calls, you will see that changes will begin to happen. And suddenly, the government of South Korea will begin to be more successful in reforming the big business conglomerates and creating a much more diversified economy. You will also see that gradually changes will begin to happen in North Korea, where those who have power will start a greater rivalry amongst each other than you have seen so far. And this is indeed one of the factors that could create change in North Korea by destabilizing the system so that there is no one who can maintain control over it. And when the centralized control begins to slip away, so that one person at the top and a few people that he trusts beneath him cannot maintain power, then you can begin to see changes happen. What I desire to give you next is a vision of the type of businesses that you need to see emerge, not only here in South Korea, but in many other nations in Southeast Asia, and of course in all nations around the world. My beloved, you have the theory of Charles Darwin about the emergence of life through a process of evolution that is based on survival of the fittest. We have before given teachings about the limitations of this theory, but I wish to comment on it again. The basis for the theory of evolution is that all beings who live on Earth must find a way to adapt to their environment, and that those who are best at adapting to their environment are the most fit, and therefore they will survive. It is not that this theory is completely wrong in the sense that you do see this process taking place in nature. But when it comes to human beings, it simply cannot explain the phenomenon that any astute observer can see in society. The deeper reality is that the situation you have seen in many societies of the past is not a natural phenomenon that was created as the result of an unconscious evolutionary process. It was an unnatural phenomenon created through a conscious evolutionary process that was affected by the fallen beings. The fallen beings have created such a state of imbalance on Earth, and they have done this through their unbridled, unrestricted aggression, their willingness to exercise power and to destroy anyone who challenged them, and to suppress or even destroy the people below them. This has created a situation where you have had many societies in history, and you have societies today, where the only way to get ahead in that society is to be extremely aggressive and extremely ruthless. This is what you see in the emergence of communism in Russia, where the Bolsheviks won the Russian Revolution because they were the most ruthless and most willing to kill. And they maintained their power, and they maintained Russia as a communist nation because they had a virtually unlimited willingness to kill their fellow human beings. You see also in the West, especially in America, how unrestricted capitalism can lead to the formation of these large corporations that seek to establish a monopoly and that are very ruthless in destroying any business that might compete with them or in suppressing new ideas and technologies that might challenge their monopoly position. And so when you look at this and compare it to the theory of Charles Darwin, anyone who is willing to look at reality can see that Darwin's theory simply cannot explain this phenomenon. For if you were to apply the theory to human society, then you must say that it is not simply the fittest, those who are able to adapt to their outer situation, that will survive. It is the most ruthless, the most aggressive, the most destructive. And then you are left with a very delicate question of explaining how those who are the most destructive in the short run can be the ones who survive in the long run. And this cannot be explained by the theory of adaptability and the survival of the fittest. You are, of course, also left having to explain how an unconscious process of evolution based on random genetic mutations could create an entire class of human beings who are so ruthless that they are willing to kill such large numbers of their own species. How can this secure the survival of the species? How could this particular trait arise as a random genetic mutation, and how could it be selected for survival for so long without eventually being selected out as unable to secure the survival of the species? And the greater truth that you can, of course, only learn from the teaching of the Ascended Masters is that the fallen beings are not the most fittest because they are adapting to a certain situation. They have actually created the situation in the past. They have created these societies where only the most aggressive can get ahead. And they have also the ability to adapt to that situation because they still have greater aggression than the vast majority of the population, who simply would never exercise this level of aggression in order to get a position in society. And so you need to recognize that this is an entirely artificial situation. And therefore you need to recognize that neither communism nor capitalism is an inevitable stage for society to go through. Neither is communism or capitalism justified by the laws of nature or by any other principle created by God or created by nature or defined by the laws of nature. It is an entirely artificial phenomenon that is created by a small elite and has only one purpose, namely to allow the elite to always maintain a privileged position at the top of society. Then you need to realize next that in the golden age that we are rapidly moving into, this situation in society simply cannot survive. It cannot survive for a variety of reasons. Part of it is that the karmic board, the overseers of the evolution of Earth, have decided that this will no longer be allowed. And there are a great number of life streams who have volunteered to take embodiment at this time so that they, from their authority of being an embodiment, can recognize and accept and make the calls for this phenomenon to no longer continue. You can serve to be the physical anchor points for the judgment of the fallen beings who are upholding this very unbalanced state in society. And so those who are astute observers will see that in the golden age, it simply will not be possible to get ahead in the global competition if you maintain a society that allows a small elite to take such power and such privileges away from the general population. And therefore, again, there is the necessity to find a new structure for society that is neither communism nor capitalism, but transcends both, where you have a broader form of ownership so that all people are sharing in the ownership of the means of production. They are not owned by a small elite of capitalists. They are not owned by the state. They are owned by all of the people who are giving their labor to produce what society is producing. This can be done in various ways, and we will find ways to bring forth the ideas to the people who have the knowledge to receive them and to implement them. You as the spiritual people can make the calls for the clearing of the opposition to the descent of these ideas through the four levels of the material universe. You can make the calls for the binding of the demons and dark forces who are opposing this descent. And you can make the calls for the judgment of Christ upon the people in embodiment who are likewise opposing the change in society. And so, without wishing to go further in depth with this topic at this point, I want to leave you with one final idea. My beloved, in the Golden Age, you will see a great change in the international political and economic landscape. You will see that there will be a new current flowing, and those nations who can tune into this current and make the necessary changes will grow in political power and strength and in economic power and strength. And those nations who cannot or will not tune into this change will decline in political, economic, and military power. Even the nations who may seem to be very powerful today will decline if they do not tune into this. You may look at what is considered by many to be the greatest, most powerful nation on earth, namely the United States, and I can assure you that if the United States does not make progress in terms of tuning in to the Aquarian Age current, then you will, within 2 to 3 decades, see the United States lose its current position as the most powerful nation economically, politically, and militarily. You will see other nations emerge who know how to tune in to the new currents and who are willing to implement it. And so the main current that will dominate the Golden Age is that a society serves its own people. This is, as Jesus said, the consciousness he demonstrated where you recognize that you are part of the whole, and that your enlightened self-interest is to raise up the whole to serve all life. And therefore you realize that the purpose of a society is to serve the people and allow those people to express their creativity. And thus you can see now that for more than a century, the power elite in many societies have used Darwin's theories to justify their power and their privilege. They have promoted the idea of survival of the fittest. But this idea is dead. Its time is up. It has long ago lost its usefulness. And in the Golden Age, the idea of survival of the fittest will be replaced by another idea, namely, the prosperity of the kindest. And this is the concept I leave you to ponder as I seal you in the love of my heart and I pour out my gratitude to you for being here and being willing to be the open doors for the multiplication of my release into the collective consciousness of both South Korea, North Korea, many other nations around the world. Be sealed, therefore, in the love of the mother's heart.